like no other patient he'd encountered. He'd found himself mystified, perplexed, intrigued, and aroused. Aroused. Yes, that too. He'd finally come to admit it to himself. But it wasn't just her beauty. It was also her strange otherworldliness. There was something unique about Constance Greene, something that went beyond her evident madness. And it was this something that drove Felder on, that pushed him to understand her, in a way he did not quite understand. Felder felt a deep-seated need to help her, to cure her. This need was only sharpened by her apparent lack of interest in receiving help. And it was into this strange tinderbox of emotion that Dr. Ernest Poole had just intruded. Felder was aware his feelings about Poole were mixed. He felt a certain proprietary interest in Constance, and the idea that another psychiatrist had previously studied her was oddly annoying. Yet Poole's own experience with Constance, quite unlike his own, apparently, promised perhaps the best chance yet of penetrating her mysteries. The fact that Poole's clinical evaluations were so different was both perplexing and encouraging. It could offer a uniquely three-dimensional vantage onto what would be, he felt increasingly certain, the case study of his career. He put his fingers on the keyboard and paused again. I was indeed born on Water Street in the '70s, the 1870s. Funny, Constance's intensity of belief, coupled with her photographic, as yet unexplained, knowledge of the old neighborhood, almost had him believing she was in fact 140 years old. But Poole's talk of her lacunar amnesia, her dissociative fugue, had brought him back to reality. Still, he felt he owed Constance enough benefit of the doubt to undertake one final search. Typing quickly, he brought up the library's database of periodicals. He would make one last search, this time of the 1970s and later, the time frame during which Constance could reasonably be expected to have been born. He moved the cursor down to the search parameters field, then paused, consulting his notes. When my parents and sister died, I was orphaned and homeless. Mr. Pendergast's house at 891 Riverside Drive was then owned by a man named Leng. Eventually, it became vacant. I lived there. He would search for three items: Green, Water Street, and Leng. But he knew from past experience he'd better keep the terms of the search vague. Scanned newspapers were notorious for typos, so he'd create a regular expression using a logical AND query. Typing once again, he entered the SQL-like search conditions. Select, where, match, ==, green, and, Watt, street, and, Leng. Almost immediately, he got a response. There was a single hit, a 3-year-old article in the New York Times, of all places. Another quick tapping of keys brought it to the screen. He began reading, then caught his breath in disbelief. Newly discovered letter sheds light on 19th-century killings. By William Smithback, Jr. New York, October 8. A letter has been found in the archives of the New York Museum of Natural History that may help explain the grisly charnel discovered in Lower Manhattan early last week. In that discovery, workmen constructing a residential tower at the corner of Henry and Catherine Streets unearthed a basement tunnel containing the remains of 36 young men and women. Preliminary forensic analysis showed that the victims had been dissected or perhaps autopsied and subsequently dismembered. Preliminary dating of the site by an archaeologist, Nora Kelly, of the New York Museum of Natural History, indicated that the killings had occurred between 1872 and 1881, when the corner was occupied by a 3-story building housing a private museum known as J.C. Shottam's Cabinet of Natural Productions and Curiosities. The cabinet burned in 1881, and Shottam died in the fire. In subsequent research, Dr. Kelly discovered the letter which was written by J.C. Shottam himself. Written shortly before Shottam's death, it describes his uncovering of the medical experiments of his lodger, a taxonomist and chemist, by the name of Enoch Leng. In the letter, Shottam alleged that Leng was conducting surgical experiments on human subjects in an attempt to prolong his own life. The human remains were removed to the medical examiner's office and have been unavailable for examination. The basement tunnel was subsequently destroyed by Mergen Fairhaven Inc., the developer of the tower, during normal construction activities. One article of clothing was preserved from the site, a dress, which was brought to the museum for examination by Dr. Kelly. Sewn into the dress, Dr. Kelly found a piece of paper, possibly a note of self-identification, written by a young woman who apparently believed she had only a short time to live. "I am Mary Green, age 19 years, number 16, Water Street, WATTER. Tests indicated the note had been written in human blood. The Federal Bureau of Investigation has taken an interest in the case. Special Agent Pendergast from the New Orleans office has been observed on the scene. Neither the New York nor the New Orleans FBI offices would comment." Number 16 Water Street. Mary Green had misspelled the street name. That was why he'd missed it before. Felder read it once, then again, and then a third time. Then he sat back very slowly, gripping the arms of the chair so tightly that his knuckles hurt. Chapter 46. 9 stories and exactly 160 feet below Dr. Felder's table in the main reading room, Special Agent Aloysius Pendergast was listening intently to the ancient bibliophile research